Let's open up to Revelation 12. New chapter. That hardly ever happens. So Revelation 12 is actually more monumentous than just a regular chapter. This isn't just any old new chapter. We're actually starting in a different section of the book now. So in the first section of the book, we were dealing with more of the grand schemes of things and how they operated. Now what we're dealing with are the individual actors. We're getting introduced to the antagonists, the villains of the story, because before we didn't really have that laid out. There's a few different things that we're going to see. We're going to get introduced to these characters: the dragon, the beast out of the sea, the beast out of the earth, Babylon, the harlot, and the men who wear the number of the beast. So we haven't seen any of these things. Now, we've gone through it and talked about it because we've been going back and forth, you know, from that last section to this front section throughout our study. But this is when we actually get introduced to these nefarious characters. And you're going to see something very interesting. They're all intertwined. You're going to see that there is this amazing, and I don't mean that in a good way, I just mean like, wow, this amazing spiritual intelligence and organization going on behind the scenes. It's tremendous. It's coordinated, and everybody has a part to play. It's something that when you take a step back and look at, you kind of have this sense of awe because of how vast the plot is to destroy the church. And the thing that's interesting is chapter 12 is going to let us know why the battleground is here. Satan wanted the battleground to be up there, as well as down here. But something happens up there to where he can't go up there anymore. And so now this entire spiritual war is focused down here with the primary aim to keep people from coming to the truth, but even more so to destroy the church, to blunt the progress of the church, and to pull as many Christians out of the church as possible back into the world. And what you'll see throughout this whole section, throughout the end of the book, is everything is designed to put pressure on people. To put pressure on people to look at this world and to hold on to this world instead of the things that God is offering. That's what the section is going to be covering. Now, chapters 12 through 14, it's going to cover the entire church age. The first section covers the overall victory of God that we just went over, chapters 1 through 11. But now we focus on those individual enemies and the roles that they play. Their defeat will be one by one, and it'll be played out through the rest of the book. Questions on like the overview before we move on? Okay, let's go ahead and read verses 1 through 4, because I guarantee you we're not going to get past that today. So he says, "A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars, and she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads were 7 diadems, and his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child." Talk about an abrupt opening, right? I mean, imagine a movie opening up like this. That it goes from like 0 to 100 real fast, doesn't it? See, intense, crazy. And I think it's interesting we're talking about the woman giving birth to a child on Mother's Day. That's kind of a cool, I didn't plan it that way, but that's a cool concept. All right. So who's the woman? What have you heard? What do you believe? I've heard, okay, Israel, like physical nation. What Israel? That's the question, isn't it? That's the question. So have you, well, Brian, you grew up in the Catholic Church. Have you, what the Catholic, did you ever hear what the Catholic Church teaches on this?
No, I don't remember if they even talked
okay.
Revelation at all.
Okay, you don't know if they discussed Revelation at all. A couple of the Catholics that I've seen talk about this, so who do you think the woman is?
Mary.
The Mary.
Yeah.
Mary. That's who I've heard. Have you heard the church, Diane? Okay. Yeah, I've heard this is Mary with the crown, queen of heaven, you know, queen of, you know, in Florida, we drove by it again when we were down there. Right on I-4, which is probably, I think it has the designation of the worst interstate in the United States. It goes from Daytona Beach in a diagonal line down to Tampa. It's a horrible interstate. But right around the middle there by Orlando, it's like six lanes wide on each side, and it's always backed up. But right in front of an outlet mall, go figure, is this huge, massive Catholic church called Mary, Queen of the Universe. So she's the queen of, she got a bump. She got an upgrade. Yep. She's so, instead of queen of heaven, she's now queen of the universe. Chad? Joel, can you get the mic? Because we still need to broadcast for the streamers. Do you need to fix that? Okay. All right.
I understand they call her the queen of heaven, but do they call Jesus the king? Because if they do, that implies that there's an incestuous relationship there.
Yeah, was that on? I was just curious.
It's green.
Okay, it's green. Okay, perfect. You can never tell because there's no amplification. I'm just making sure it was on there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, they believe we have cannibalistic tendencies during the Lord's Supper, so maybe there's the accusations towards the early church was that we were number one, we were atheists because we didn't believe Caesar was God. Number two, we were cannibals because of the Lord's Supper. And number two, we had incestuous relationships because we, you know, brothers would be married to sisters and sisters married to brothers because they didn't understand the spiritual concept. Maybe the Catholic Church just decided to embrace those things and let's lean into them. I don't know, but that would make sense, wouldn't it? Yeah. But no, you would actually, Solomon had a throne for Bathsheba set up on his side. So there is a concept where there's joint regency between mother and son, like that. So there is precedent for it. There's precedent for it. Yeah. So the woman, I've heard all different kinds of things. Now, my thought process on this, and it's not really different from, you know, the folks that we hang out with, but it's definitely different than the way the mainstream of the Christian, quote unquote, Christian world views it. I think the woman in Revelation 12 represents the faithful covenant people of God, the true Israel, first seen in the Old Testament as the faithful of national Israel, from whom the Messiah comes, and then is seen in her New Testament form as the people of God in Christ, whose offspring are those who keep the commandments and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So in other words, we understand now looking at it backwards that the true Israel of God is made up of Old Covenant and New Covenant people. We're together in this. So as a result of that, what I think you see with this woman here is the entirety, represented in one woman, the entirety of true spiritual Israel. Remember, Paul says it very clearly. They're not all Israel who are descended from Israel, right? Paul made that clear at that time. And we see that in the Old Testament. Yes, you had an entire physical nation of Israel, but then that nation split. And you had God telling these people, it's not about what, you're not saved because of what physical blood flows in your veins and what tribe you're from. You're saved by faith. You're saved by the love that you have for me. You're saved by your obedience. People have always and will always be saved by faith, not by physical blood, but by the spiritual blood of Christ. That's the only way that we have access. And what you're seeing here is the personification as a single woman, this nation. Singular nation brought in God in this picture. Now, what we're going to see in chapter 12 especially is the redemptive plan of God as seen from the spiritual realm, like at 100,000 feet, like an overview. This isn't how it plays out necessarily on earth. This is what's going on in heaven behind the scenes. And it's, I think if someone could accurately make a movie of this, it would be amazing. Because this is high drama, man. This is high stakes of what's actually going on here. So let's look at this woman and what she looks like. It says a great sign appeared in heaven. And that also, we're not talking literal, as if the first chapter and first verse of Revelation, you know, that tells us these things are signified, they're signs. But he talks here in verses 1 and 3, and he specifically says these are signs. In other words, don't try to interpret anything here as literal. The physical Israel is not literally a woman. That's why this can't be Mary. You know, it's not a physical, literal woman. But it says, a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed in the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head was a crown of 12 stars. Does that bring anything up from the Old Testament? Does that ring any bells from the Old Testament? Specifically Genesis. Yes. Let's go back to Genesis 37. It's exactly what. Yeah. Yeah. This automatically made me think of Joseph. Now he had the first dream, which was the sheaves of wheat, right? Talking about how, you know, his brothers and his father and all those guys, their sheaves of wheat bowed down. But then in verse 9, Genesis 37, 9, he says, now he had still another dream and related it to his brothers and said, lo, I have had still another dream, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. And he related it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down to you, or before you, to the ground? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. Now, in Joseph's dream, it is a bit different. Instead of 12 stars, we've got 11 stars, right? Now, Joseph would have been that 12 star. Representing the full 12 tribes, because two tribes came from Joseph. So you can say there's 12 there. But in all actuality, because two tribes came from Joseph, we have 13. We have 13. And which is why we have 13 apostles, even though it's called the 12 apostles. So, you know, people always like to talk about, well, recently, it seems, people talking about Paul not really being an apostle so they could escape his teachings. But 13 tribes, 13 apostles. It just works out that way, but God always calls them 12. So anyway, here it's a little bit different because we have the sun, which represents who in the dream? Jacob. Yep, Jacob. And then you got the moon, which represents his mama. And then you got the 11, which are his brothers. And they're all bowing down to him. Now, the dream's interesting because did that literally take place? One person's missing from that in the fulfillment. Who is it? Mother. The mother. She died. Yep, giving birth to Benjamin, right? So what we're seeing here is the whole representation, though. He's like, In other words, it seems to me like there's something a little bit more going on here. Now it's talked about in Revelation. And so we go back to Revelation 12, we see that the picture is a little bit different here. But the imagery is striking back to Genesis 37, isn't it? It's a very similar type of a concept. What we're seeing here, in, like I said, in my opinion, is the glorious nature of the true Israel of God. Her adornment. She's clothed in the Son. The Father is wrapped around her. The all of creation is a footstool under her feet. Right? And then the stars are all around her head in a crown. They were in a crown, symbolizing ruling and reigning. This is the true Israel of God. This is the church. Past, present, future. Now, what's interesting is I think this is also a picture of what this looked like. And again, symbolically, of course, how God viewed it at the time of the birth of Christ and throughout the history of the nation. Because she's with child, cried out being in labor and in pain to give birth. Now, you think about how this looks. When the nation of Israel was around during the time of Christ, at the birth of Christ, was she particularly glorious, powerful, majestic, and mighty? Not physically. Not at all. No king, ruled by a foreign power, Herod's in charge of him, some Idumean guy who was a despot. They were in disarray. It wasn't anything to write home about. But what you're seeing is how God saw them. This is how God looks at people. And it reminds me of David when Samuel's coming through. And he's looking at all of David's brothers and he's like, oh, surely this is the Lord's anointed. And God had to tell Samuel something. What did God tell Samuel when he was looking at David's brothers and saying, surely this is the one? He's like, dude, I don't examine things the way you examine them, right? He's like, I don't look at things the way you look at them. You look at the outside. I look at what's on the inside. Now, let's go back to Zechariah 4 for a second. I think this small little passage deals with it really, really, really well. Zechariah 4. Now, we spent a little time in Zechariah 4 dealing with the lampstands. Then look at verse 4. He says, then I said to the angel who was speaking with me, saying, what are these, my Lord? So the angel who was speaking with me answered and said to me, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my Lord. Then he said to me, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel, saying, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts. What are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you will become a plain, and he will bring forth the top stone with shouts of grace, grace to it. See, this was the remnant that came back. They were in the midst of rubble of the capital city. They didn't even have any land outside the capital city. They're trying to rebuild the temple. They're trying to rebuild the house of God. And what is, I mean, physically they look like nothing. Physically they looked completely insignificant. But what's God say? It's not going to be by might. It's not going to be by power. It's going to be by his spirit. And then God goes and tells Zerubbabel, it's like, you got a mountain before you? it's going to become a plane. In other words, all obstacles are going to be removed. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. But all obstacles are removed. My point is, God doesn't see things as they are on the outside. So sometimes, you know, sometimes it can be a little discouraging. I get that. You go and you see these other churches and they've got thousands of people in them and, you know, supposedly things look amazing on the outside. Or you look at how the world is doing and sometimes you see, oh man, look at all these enemies arrayed against us. You know, how are we going to be able to fight? You know, look at the political arena and how rigged things are. It looks horrible. Looks like it's hopeless. Well, maybe in this world it is. I mean, if you think about it from this perspective, this world is like the Titanic. When Adam ate the fruit, it hit the iceberg. It hit the iceberg thousands of years ago. And just like the Titanic, it's been slowly, slowly taking on water. Me, using that analogy, I'm kind of curious how far out of the water we are right now. You know, if you've ever seen the movie, you know, it showed that it started, then are we up here? Or are we still, you know, down here? We got a little ways to go. I don't know. But if you've ever seen a ship sink, it kind of starts slow. And then at the end, it starts moving really, really, really fast. You reach a point where that water just takes it right down. We hit that iceberg when Adam ate the fruit. This world, it is hopeless. This country started by fallen people. Imperfect system. It's going to fall. Guaranteed. We look at our little group and we look at all the other little groups scattered around the world and we think, oh, I mean, I know there's other Christians around here. Has to be. I know that. But you're looking at an area of, what have we got in RVA? Like 1.5 million? Somewhere around there? And we're about, what, 50, 60 people? On a good day? What in the world can we do? We can do exactly what God needs us to do. We can do amazing things. I mean, this last week, a soul got saved from everlasting torment. Maya got immersed. How awesome is that? Really awesome. Thank you, Micah. Really awesome. See, and I'm really thankful for the Dillon family, for Jeremiah, for Jess, for Micah, for the way that they work together, and for Victoria too. I mean, you all play a part in that when you're working with them day in and day out. But she's got extended family, doesn't she? Imagine how difficult it would have been for Maya to overcome, you know, whatever obstacles she had to overcome in order to make that decision. Because we all have obstacles to overcome with that. We have that inner battle, we have that inner fight, and we gotta make that decision, right? Imagine if this was a hot, dysfunctional mess where we're all backbiting and we're bringing the wrong example of Christianity and people are getting hurt, people are getting damaged. I've seen a lot of people say, yeah, I don't want any part of that. So every time one of our young folks comes up and gets immersed into Christ, that's a team effort. We're all playing a part in that by exemplifying the Spirit of Christ and by growing and moving forward together. And that victory, you want to know, that was Wednesday night, right? You want to know what happened? What time, Jess? 9 o'clock. So you want to know what happened 9 o'clock on Wednesday night? Whoops. I have a drinking problem. You want to know what happened 9 o'clock on Wednesday night? All of heaven partied. Because one soul came in. That's exciting. That's what we're doing, folks. We're changing lives on a one-on-one basis. We're changing eternal destinies. Not by might, not by power, not by sheer physical presence, but by His Spirit. So don't ever lose heart. Yeah, small, I get it. But mighty, powerful, not because of anything special about us, but because of the Spirit of Christ, the power of His Word, and the faith that gets brought to the table. Questions or comments before we move on? All right. So, don't worry about the size of what's going on. This is how God views Israel. She is beautiful to Him. She is special to Him. She is powerful because she is His bride. Now, she's in labor, ready to give birth. Now, I think, you know, obviously this definitely pictures the nation through Mary. So I'm not saying Mary's not working here. But it's Mary as a part of Israel because the Messiah came forth from Israel. From the Hebrews, from the Jews. But I also think that this is representative of the nation as it's gone forth. Because if you think about, we've done a lot of study on Messianic prophecy. One of the things that we've seen is how God has systematically brought forth the formation of the Messiah. I mean, the birth of Christ was not done without a whole bunch of other things that were done before it. I mean, Galatians chapter 4 talks about in the fullness of time. This was a step-by-step process that started back in Genesis 3:15. In all actuality, this verse harkens back to that. Because notice, what does Genesis 3:15 say? The seed of woman will crush the head of the serpent. This is a woman. That's all she's identified as. She's not identified as Israel. And the one coming from her is the seed of woman. And she, or and he, is going to crush the head of the serpent. Oh, I just put this together. Check this out. Go to verse 9. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, who was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. You got the seed of the woman. Specifically throwing down the serpent. That is 100% a connection back to Genesis 3:15. Because if I'm not mistaken, I need to research this, but maybe y'all have already done this. I think this isn't this the only other time that Satan is called the serpent in identifying who was back there in the garden in Genesis 3. In other words, specifically by the name of the serpent. I can't think of another time where Satan is called the serpent outside of Genesis 3 and here in Revelation 12. I could be wrong. So I'll have to research that. But even if it's not, it's definitely the connections being made. That's what's taking place here. But anyway, so this concept of giving birth, I think this is in reference to a lot of other things here too. So let's go back to the book of Micah, chapter 4. Micah chapter 4, and let's look at verse 9. And again, this is going to be interesting too, because there's going to be a connection maybe when we get to chapter 5. He says, "Now why do you cry loudly?" So he's talking to Israel. "Is there no king among you? or has your counselor perished? That agony has gripped you like a woman in childbirth. Writhe in labor to give birth, daughter of Zion, like a woman in childbirth, for now you will go out of the city, dwell in the field, and go to Babylon. There you will be rescued. There the hand, there the Lord will redeem you from the hand of your enemies. And many nations have been assembled against you, who say, let her be polluted, let her eyes gloat over Zion. But they do not know the thoughts of the Lord, and they do not understand his purpose. For he has gathered them like sheaves on the threshing floor. Arise and thresh, daughter of Zion, for your horn I will make iron, and your hooves I will make bronze, that you may pulverize many peoples, that you may devote to the Lord their unjust gain, and their wealth to the Lord of all the earth. Now, notice how there's a connection here between five. Same thought process is going on. Now, muster yourselves in troops, daughter of troops. They have laid siege against us with the rod. They will smite the judge of Israel on the cheek. But as for you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you one will go forth for me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Therefore, he will give them up until the time when she who is in labor has borne a child. Then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel. He will arise and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will remain, because at that time he will be great to the ends of the earth. This one will be our peace. See the connection? I mean, back before the destruction of Babylon, now remember, Micah is a contemporary of Isaiah, so this is before the destruction of Jerusalem by Babylon. He's talking about them being in labor. Childbirth, all of this stuff going on. And then that theme flows all the way down into the actual birth of the Messiah. His comings forth are from the days of eternity. So you have a woman who's going to give birth to the eternal one. It's a very interesting prophecy, but it's all connected. It just doesn't start in chapter 5, verse 1. Sometimes the chapter divisions and the verse divisions can create an arbitrary division in our mind. So it's always good to go back a little bit and see if there's a connection. Does it flow through to the end of the, past the end of the chapter? Those types of things. And a lot of times it does. Sometimes it doesn't. But a lot of times it can. So what we're actually seeing here, it's kind of cool. We're seeing in one verse, hearkening back to Genesis 37 with the dream Joseph had. And we're also seeing it go into the book of Micah with the whole concept of the birth coming and weaving these concepts together effortlessly. It's a really cool picture of how God's operating here. All right, questions or comments on that? It's 10:30. I think we'll go ahead and stop here for today because I will not have time to get into verses 3 and 4, because the scene changes. You know, we've got now the dragon coming into the picture, using his tail to wipe away a third of the stars, and all kinds of stuff going on here. So I think we'll go ahead and stop and hit on this next week. But questions or comments so far on anything? Do you still got the mic?
It's on. It's green.
There's no amplification. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what's going on in 3 and 4 here that's already happened when Christ ascended, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, what's taking place in 3 and 4 is already going to be done by the time John is writing this. Yep. And that's what we're going to get into next week. Yeah. We're going to wildly speculate. Everybody loves wild speculation, don't they? It's fantastic. Free for all hermeneutics, man. My favorite school.